From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, January 20th, 2017. And on this inauguration day, a wide variety of Mainers gathers in Augusta to read aloud from the Constitution. And we'll look at how President Donald Trump's immigration policies could impact people with student visas and the universities that benefit from them. That's all ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
First today, as you have likely heard, at noon today, Donald J. Trump was sworn in as the 45th President of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
At that very moment, Muhammad Ali Ibrahim stood in the State House Hall of Flags in Augusta and read aloud the 23rd Amendment to the Constitution.
A number of electors of President and Vice President equal to the whole number of senators and representatives in Congress to which
the reading was part of an event organized by the American Civil Liberties Union of Maine, but as Steve Missler reports, it brought together a cast of Mainers representing an unusually broad swath of the political spectrum.
It's not something you see at the State House very often. A progressive Democrat standing shoulder to shoulder with a staunch conservative libertarian. But here, Democratic State Senator Shana Bellows, former director of the Maine ACLU, reads from the Fourth Amendment, which protects Americans' right to privacy.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall...
And Republican State Senator Eric Brakey, a fierce advocate for federalism, reads from the Tenth Amendment.
The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
The ACLU's Rachel Healy distributes pocket-sized U.S. constitutions to the 100 or so people gathered here to hear the speakers who form a line near the lectern. The timing of the event is no accident. The people gathered here decided to skip the pomp and circumstance taking place 500 miles away in the nation's capital. There, the newly sworn 45th president of the United States thunders about a country mired in a dystopian crisis, weakened by terrorists, illegal immigrants, and politicians. Gangs are running rampant, he says. Burned-out factories litter the landscape like tombstones. Impoverished, undereducated Americans are without hope.
This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
But Trump may face some resistance. The ACLU has vowed to sue Trump if he tramples on American civil liberties. When he won the election, the organization warned that many of his campaign promises were unconstitutional and unlawful. On Thursday, the group filed its first Freedom of Information Act, seeking to discover conflicts with Trump's business interests. The Hall of Flags event is less confrontational. The speakers read from sections of the Constitution that align with their background or interests, and they represent an array of backgrounds and political views. Marina Blanchard, an African-American woman, stepped up and presented the 13th Amendment.
Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their...
David Trahan, head of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine and a former Republican state senator, recited the Second Amendment.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Paul McCarrier, an advocate for legal marijuana, read the 18th Amendment, the prohibition of alcoholic beverages, and then the 21st Amendment, which repealed it. Kennebec County Sheriff Ken Mason, a Republican, spoke for the First Amendment, and Eliza Townsend, of the Maine Woman's Lobby, gave voice to the 19th.
The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex.
By the time the reading ends in the Hall of Flags, President Trump is finishing his inauguration speech.
And yes, together we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
And Allison Bie, the director of the ACLU of Maine, makes her own pledge to fight for the protections and ideals that Trump had just sworn to protect.
Equality, justice, and freedom. Thank you.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The Down East Institute in Beals, a fully equipped marine research lab, will more than double its size with the help of $5 million in investment funding. A.J. Higgins has more.
A $2 million donation from the Next Generation Foundation triggered the release of an additional $2 million in state bond funds to provide the bulk of the $5 million expansion at the Down East Institute. The laboratory is home to the Maine Science Field Station of the University of Maine at Machias. On hand for the announcement, Chancellor Jim Page says the facility is building a national reputation in the research community.
It's absolutely imperative that Maine leads the way in understanding our natural environment, understanding our natural resources, and being able to constructively manage them for the long haul. If we get this right, this is not just important for this community and this region, this is important for the country.
The DEI's hatchery operations have provided hundreds of millions of juvenile shellfish to communities and shellfish farmers throughout Maine. Sue Usman, president of the University of Maine at Machias, says her campus's marine science students are energized by studying at the Institute.
Not only do our students have the opportunity to learn and to conduct directed research here, but they're able to rub elbows with scientists from all over the world. They have this incredible opportunity, and they come back to campus glowing. They are so excited by their experience. They're so newly motivated to continue and complete their own studies so that they can join the marine research community as scientists and researchers themselves.
Improvements at the lab will include expanded laboratory and shellfish production areas. State Senator Joyce Maker, a Cowes Republican, says the facility is an example of the impact that public-private partnerships can have on a region.
This public and private partnership is about far more than bringing investment and opportunity to Washington County. Establishing the nation's easternmost fully equipped marine research facility at the Down East Institute builds on our regional strengths and demonstrates the Down East Maine people has the talent it takes to lead and to serve all of Maine.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
With visas in hand, about 85,000 undergraduate and graduate students from overseas are pursuing higher education in schools around New England. That's out of more than a million who come to study in the U.S. every year. As New England Public Radio's Jill Kaufman reports, graduate students in particular are big business for colleges, but President Trump's anti-immigration stances have brought uncertainty into the classroom.
Young men and women from China, India, Saudi Arabia, and Korea make up the largest number of international students coming to the U.S. Their top areas of study, science and technology research, engineering and math, known collectively as the STEM fields.
Ultimately, anyone gets into STEM because they believe, or at least they hope, that they want to change the world.
Archit Rastogi is doing his PhD at UMass Amherst in molecular and cellular biology.
At the moment, I'm working on studying how fetal exposure to certain environmental toxins can lead to diseases later in life.
He's here on an F1 visa, and he's part of a growing trend. A 2014 National Science Foundation report found the number of international students earning degrees in the STEM fields rose by 35%. The number of U.S. citizens, on the other hand, fell 5%. That's one reason international students are in demand at big research schools like UMass, UConn, and Brown. Another reason, money. Their tuition is sometimes higher and often paid in full. And the STEM knowledge they bring allows schools to apply for millions in research grants. Otherwise, Rastogi says,
Without grant money, the university can't really function. Like, I don't know if you're aware of how grants work, but, you know, there's a set amount of money. Like, if it's $1 million grant, so UMass will get $420,000 on that $1 million grant. I mean, the electricity, the machines, they're so expensive.
And schools are recruiting hard.
Going to college and studying in the United States has been a dream come true for us.
As current F-status international students studying here in the United States, we know firsthand all the great things an American education can provide. Not only for us.
But if you listen to the incoming president.
I want the next generation of production and innovation to happen right here on our great homeland, America, creating wealth and jobs for American workers.
And among his initial actions.
On immigration, I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker.
International student visas are in the mix. Right after the election, university administrators like Ken Reed, who runs the International Student Program at UMass Amherst, began hearing from prospective students overseas and those on campus.
I think something that none of us have completely comprehended yet is how this is going to impact international admissions.
Sitting in his office, Reed points to a document written 2 years ago by U.S. Senator Jeffrey Sessions.
So I made these for you. This is for you, just in case it's helpful for you.
Sessions is Trump's nominee for attorney general, and he's chair of the Senate Subcommittee on Immigration in the National Interest.
He has some very specific things that really have potential impact on international students. What's called OPT, or Optional Practical Training, which is a work authorization that international students get after they complete studies.
For career and research purposes, the OPT is really important, Reed says, and it can lead to a work visa known as an H-1B. But if postdocs can't continue that STEM-related work, started as high-level graduate students, that research, which has been supported by federal and private money, might not make it out of academia. Reed says no matter what happens, enrollment levels won't stay the same.
You know, we're at an all-time high for international enrollment in the United States, and statistically right now, to see the impact next year, it should be pretty noticeable.
Jobs are one thing, threats to national security another. Trump's original plan to stop all Muslims from entering the country has softened. He now calls his plan extreme vetting. Alan Goodman directs the International Institute of Education, which conducts an annual survey of foreign students. He says international students are among the most vetted visitors to the United States, Muslim or otherwise.
After 9/11, the U.S. instituted the requirement that there be personal interviews for every visa seeker and holder. We have the staff today. We have the procedures. And the international students coming here remain the most closely credentialed of any group of persons entering the United States.
Over the past few weeks, schools in the U.S. sent out acceptance letters. And in about a month, prospective students will start responding yes or no. Will international graduate students be wary of coming to the U.S., of starting important work, only to potentially leave it unfinished? Archit Rastogi says he knows a lot of people who are at the very end of their PhDs.
And they're really close to doing all these great, amazing, crucial things, but they're very worried because they have to reapply for their visa, and by the time they reapply for the visa, the administration will have changed.
Rastogi says he came to the U.S. to do research in state-of-the-art labs that don't exist in India. He's got about 4 years left and eventually plans to return home. He's lucky, he says, his visa doesn't run out until 2021. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Jill Kaufman.
And that's This Day in Maine for Friday, January 20th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a wonderful weekend.